Welcome to episode 33 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the internet era through improved customer experiences online and off. My name's Tema Frank. For a long time now, it's been striking me that one of the biggest barriers companies face in improving their customer experience, especially now that everything's going omni-channel, is the challenge of integrating all their systems and data so that everybody's singing from the same song sheet. It's really, really tough. And although there are integration companies out there to help you do it, unfortunately, they often don't do themselves a lot of good because they tend to speak very technically, and it's really kind of off-putting and intimidating to people who really need their services. So today I am bringing you an interview with Robin Smith, who's the co-founder of Virtual Logistics, which was one of the first companies in Canada to offer electronic data interchange, EDI, which, as he points out, used to be very straightforward, but now has become quite complex. I did my best in this interview to pin him down and make him minimize his use of jargon. There are a few little terms in here that you might or might not be familiar with. We can start with the most obvious, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with, B2B and B2C, business-to-business sales and business-to-consumer sales. But quickly, we get into more complex things like ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning Systems, which are basically computer systems that do try to bring together a whole bunch of functions into one place. And most mid-sized to large companies now do have some sort of ERP. XML stands for Extensible Markup Language, which is a coding language that basically, kind of like HTML, it is both human-readable and machine-readable. JSON stands for JavaScript Object Notation. I had to look that one up, which is a lightweight data interchange format, according to Wikipedia. CRM stands for Customer Relationship Management Tool, which many companies have as well. Probably one of the best known would be something like Salesforce. EDI stands for Electronic Data Interchange, so ways of getting your data back and forth. And an API, an application program interface, is all about helping programs talk to one another, and we actually discussed that a fair bit in the interview. So perhaps not the lightest interview I've ever done, but if you are seriously interested in improving customer experience in your organization or in improving your marketing in your organization, you really owe it to yourself to listen to this interview. Chat with you briefly at the end.
Virtual Logistics was founded 21 years ago. In 1994, we were one of the first companies in Canada to offer integrated EDI. And EDI is electronic data interchange, and it is the granddaddy of e-commerce messaging. So it's basically the electronic transmission of business documents.
Right. And initially that was with mainly with suppliers, was it not?
Correct. So it started over 40 years ago in the automotive industry. With just-in-time business models, and it over the years, you know, through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, it became pervasive in retail, in insurance, in healthcare. Actually, when you go to the dentist and you have your teeth cleaned, and your dentist through their software files a claim, yeah. There's an EDI message that goes to the insurance company in the back. That's why you get paid, or they get paid so quickly. Right. So today, EDI is pervasive in huge numbers of industries. What has changed in EDI, and this is the rise of the internet, is that rather than EDI being transacted through value-added networks, much like a glorified email system, it's now going over the internet. You know, so that's where we got our start, and that was integration in the supply chain. So it's the order comes in, it's got to go into an ERP or an accounting system, you do your invoicing, the invoice has to be sent out, you do your pick, pack, and your barcoding and your shipping, and you've got to send an advance shipment notice. So for us, what we've found is that traditionally EDI is extremely structured in the sense that it's a retailer will define X number of transactions that they do. They give you their definitions. They tell you how they want to communicate. Here's the business rules around it. And it's a fairly straightforward process. But what's happened in the last 5 years is that we've had this explosion of of Omni, Multi, any, you know, whatever channel you want to call it, that now the touch points are becoming incredibly complex.
Yeah.
Because you're no longer dealing with a structured box. You're now dealing with applications that have different mechanisms to interface. So what's happened in our business is that we've gone from the traditional EDI now into data integration in the supply chain. So if you think of the supply chain as starting from an order and working its way through until whatever is ordered gets to the customer, however it goes to the customer or through whatever channel it comes in, there's a tremendous number of data touch points there. So today we do integration in EDI. EDI is still a big component of what we do. And we also do integration in the e-commerce, in the logistics, healthcare procurement. And if you think about that whole order flow today and all those touch points and all that omni and multi-channel stuff, that data in that order has uses outside of just the pure transactional foundation or the pure transaction. That data now can be pushed up to marketing automation. It can go to CRM. It can go to an analytics platform. It can go to, you know, a whole variety of things that you or applications out there.
So to what extent do you help connect it to those systems? Are you involved in that side of things at all?
Yeah, so that's exactly what our business is. Our business is connecting the bits and pieces together in that supply chain. So if you think of an order can come in a whole variety of ways. It can come in as an EDI message. It could come in as an XML or JSON document off a website or an API. It could come in a spreadsheet. It could come in an email. It could come in a PDF. A PDF is a tab delimited file if it's not a JPEG. So any of these documents can be processed as long as they have a structure to them. And so what you've got, and you know, some context here to come back to your question about, you know, it's the biggest thing that you see companies struggling with, is that what you've got going on right now is that you've got this absolutely perfect storm of the rise of the internet, the pervasiveness of the internet. You have the absolute explosion in APIs. An API is an application program interface. So it's a way of interacting with the underlying business objects of an application.
So basically, just in pure layperson's terms, so it's basically a way to talk from one program to another program to actually communicate with each other. Is that kind of what it is?
That's exactly what it is. It's just a communications conduit. That's exactly right. So in the old days, you picked up the telephone and talked to your partner. Today, we send an electronic document from our system to their system, and the two APIs talk to each other. So, so the biggest API out there is actually the internet. And the explosion of APIs today is if you go on programmable web who inventory APIs, every month there's hundreds of new APIs that are being published. Some are public, some are private APIs. So I may decide, Tima, that you and I are going to share information between our applications. That would be a private conversation, so there'd be private APIs. But I may be consuming public APIs, like I may have a Magento website or a Shopify website, and each one of those platforms has a published API. So, you know, this is the challenge that companies are facing now.
So let's take the example of a company, let's say, that has a Shopify website. They've got this website. Customers will go online either through their phones or their desktop, whatever, place an order there. Then that order through the Shopify platform, well, first of all, it goes to someplace for payment. And then the order gets sent through somehow to the company, which then has to fulfill, track the inventory.
Well, I love the way you're trying to describe it all, because it's absolutely perfect, because it shows the issues. It highlights the issues that a lot of companies face with understanding how all this information moves. So,
right.
You know, the first thing I say to people is, if you're in the e-commerce world everybody fixates on the technology. Well, I got to have this shopping cart, or I got to do this on my cart, or I got to do that. No.
Right.
They got to start. They first and foremost, and you're a marketing person, so this is gonna ring true with you.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, they have to define what it is they represent.
Right.
And a lot of small businesses in North America struggle with what they actually are. Who are they? What's their why? Why do they do what they do? What makes them different? What makes them unique? And then they need to make the next step, which is, what is the experience? If I'm in e-commerce, what is the experience I want to engender with my customer?
Absolutely.
What's the experience I want to project to that customer? Because you know as well as I know that anything e-commerce is a trust relationship. I don't have a physical store that I can go in and touchy-feely. I don't have a sales rep to go in and irritate me with. there's a leap of faith exercise that's going on here. So it's really important for companies to understand that what they project out is a representation of who they are. So the next step in that process, once you've defined that, you've now gone a good way into defining what it is data-wise that you need to satisfy that experience. And this is where picking the bits and pieces that is going to make up your total solution. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. we've come from a world of a lot of companies traditionally looking for one neck to strangle, one solution to do everything.
One neck to strangle, I like that.
that's where this model falls apart, and that the technology is changing so rapidly in so many different areas that there's no one solution provider that's going to be able to provide everything. So,
well, and this is where APIs, I think, are exciting, because it makes it easier for you to connect different systems.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. But here's the challenge. You have to make sure that the applications that you are going to put into the mix have the proper APIs so that you can move the data between them to provide the experience that you previously defined in that marketing exercise.
So how would they know? How would a company know if it's the right kind of API?
Well, I think that the first step would be to map out the experience that they want their customer to have. And it goes beyond. There's a great little graphic out on the internet where you can. It's the life cycle of an order, and if you go through that, it's like this perfect world where the order just goes from box to box, and everything is so simple. But how many of us know on e-commerce that's not how the world works? You know, you get an order in, and you've got a back order situation. I mean, I've got a situation going on in my own personal life where I ordered one of these drones because I think they're cool. Well, because I'm on the bleeding edge of this stuff, I ordered one that was just released, and I've been waiting for this drone to come. And mm-hmm. I go on the website of the company I bought it from, and they're local here. There's no updates. There's no information. I email the guy. Mm-hmm. It takes him like 4 days to send me an email. Well, we haven't got our shipment from China yet, da 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 da. Well, think of that interaction as the experience that you're engendering with your customer. How are you going to generate the data to do that in an automated fashion? Because if you've got 1,000 orders pending, you're not going to have somebody pounding the keyboard sending emails.
Right.
That just doesn't make sense. So once you've defined that, then the next step is to look at those applications and say, okay, what are the
interfaces? So just hang on. Before you go there, I just want to back up a minute. So at that step, the order placement step, it's almost like you need to think through what are all the things that could go wrong, like being out of stock. Okay.
Correct. And I think that it's not only what could go wrong, it's what could go wrong in the entire cycle of the way you move that order through your supply chain. So it's what happens when that order comes in? Do I bring it into my accounting system? In most e-commerce, you asked earlier about the payment gateway. In most e-commerce scenarios, what happens is when I place the order and I put my credit card in, there's a pre-authorization against my credit card.
Yes.
And that sits for a period of time to allow the retailer to execute on that order. So do their pick, pack, and ship. So it's what happens. Does that go into my accounting system? Now, do I have to send it out to a third-party logistics because I don't do my own warehousing. What's the integration between those two pieces? Once it's shipped, am I getting the tracking information back? Because typically it's that tracking information that on an e-commerce site will, once it's uploaded, should trigger the invoice process that then takes that pre-auth on the credit card and sends it out the door for actual credit card charging. So at each step of the way in the process, you need to look at what are all the touch points in your supply chain where you have to move data. And then from there, then you need to say, okay, my Shopify site has a REST-based API and the payload is an XML message. Perfect.
What does that mean?
A REST-based is a RESTful API. It's a technical term. It's the protocol, it's the communications protocol that's used to communicate with the back end of Shopify. The XML payload is the actual document I get, the electronic document of that order information.
Okay.
So it's very important to educate yourself as to what are the different interface types. And actually we have a webinar that we've done on this where we talk about all the different types of interfaces. And what happens is that the ability to integrate is directly proportionate to the simplicity and the currentness of the API. So if you're choosing an API or you're choosing an application that has limited access, then you've just chosen and created a weak link in your experience chain. Now, some companies, when they're small and they're starting out, they can use the plugins that we've become accustomed to, like these little app plugins that do point-to-point integration. Those will work very well when somebody's starting out, but when they start to scale, those will fall apart. And this is where we see a lot of companies coming to us. They're starting to scale. Their order volumes are going up, and they're trying to connect all these bits and pieces with point-to-point plugins. But they haven't designed the data flow. They haven't designed how information is going to flow through the system and work through the applications that they're going to use. And that's where we see a lot of companies failing and having a hard time.
So if you've got a smallish business, let's say, and you've been doing that and all of a sudden sales are going up, how complicated and how time consuming is it for them to then transition to something more robust?
On one hand, it's an easy question to answer, and on the other, it's a difficult question. And the easy part of it is that you've got to look first and foremost at the applications that you have in your solution mix. Because the reality is that there's not one solution in that mix.
Sure.
You're going to have multiple. So you may have a shopping cart, with an integrated payment gateway. You may now have a loyalty platform like Sweettooth or giftcertificates.com that you're using for rewarding loyalty. You may have an accounting system. A lot of small businesses will use QuickBooks or Simply. And unfortunately, these are closed environments, so it's very difficult to do integration to that. So part of the process here is to look at the where you want to take your business. So it segues really nicely into that whole marketing thing again, which is how are you going to market yourself to get to begin to scale and to get yourself to a point where you've got that order volume, and then do you have the underlying infrastructure to be able to handle it? And what we see is that a lot of people, because they don't understand the technology, they make an investment decision based on the cost. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that they start to scale, and all of a sudden now it's like they've got this spaghetti of links.
Yeah, I've worked with companies like that.
You've got so many points of failure in there that when things go wrong, they'll go wrong in a real spectacular manner.
Okay, so if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking at buying new software, whether it's your accounting system or your shopping cart or your e-commerce generally, what are the questions that they should be asking to make sure that it will be scalable?
That's an excellent question, because I think it's one that a lot of people get. They orient the question in a different way. It's rather, what sort of technology should I buy, as opposed to coming back to the experience, because if you haven't defined the experience, you can't go and choose the technology.
Right.
So once you've got the experience and the definition of what that experience is, then I would look at technology. So the first thing, there are different areas within the business that you've got to satisfy, is that you've got to define what the front-end UI experience is on the e-commerce. Mm-hmm. And you've got to look at that within the context of the online experience that I'm going to engender with that customer, and then looking at it from the perspective of if this product does everything that I want it to do, can I now integrate it, and do I have the hooks to be able to move the data from the shopping cart into my accounting and vice versa? Because
So I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just trying to keep thinking of this from the viewpoint of an entrepreneur who really isn't techie.
Yeah.
So again, what would they ask to know if it's got the hooks, if it's got that ability? How do they find that out?
Well, it comes back to what I said earlier. You've got to define what it is that you want to have as an experience, and what is the data that's going to create that experience. So, you know, and I can give you some examples. So, for example, if I have a shopping cart, most people will look at, well, I want to get my orders down. I want to maybe give my shipment information back up. Well, what happens now if your business model requires you to create customers first on your shopping cart and then bring them into your accounting system? Because usually it's the other way around. You create them in your accounting system and push them up if you're in B2B. And B2C can be a little bit different. So I need to know whether I can move my customer information down into my accounting system, because I can't post that order in the accounting system if that customer is not already set up.
So you're saying that if they've thought through exactly what the process is, then when they're selecting software, they can ask the specific question, will this work, without additional?
Exactly. So, for example, can I upload my product information from my accounting system? Because ideally what you want is you want to look at it as a hub and spoke model, where your hub is your ERP in the middle. That is your central point of truth for data. Because don't forget, we're trading electronic data here. So I want my central point of truth, and all the applications I have that satisfy my experience, or the experience that I want to project, are really spokes in that entire scenario. So my e-commerce is a spoke. My loyalty is a spoke. My marketing automation is a spoke. And I need to be able to move data in and out from my central hub to be able to satisfy each one of those. So that's the approach we take, is, okay, where's the central point of truth? And then from there, what are the spokes that you want to, put in place? And the reason we approach it this way is that often what you'll see is, I've got this shopping cart and I want to go to this application. So what happens is you get these point-to-point integrations between the shopping cart and the marketing automation platform. But there's no hub in the middle. And what you've just created is a scenario where you have no data synchronization. You have no data standardization across the board.
Right. So you end up with different results in your accounting system and in your shipping system. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So the other beneficial element of having that central point of truth is that you now have the ability to turn applications on or off depending on how your business evolves. So, for example, let's say I've got a loyalty platform and I'm going along and I realize that there's something better out there. There's something that really fits the bill and it's really cool, and I realize it's got a much more flexible API. I can do much tighter integration. Rather than having to redesign your entire process, all you're doing is turning one application on and connecting in another application to that hub. So that gives you the ability now to scale and to be a lot more flexible in your integrations.
So does a company like yours provide that central hub, or you're just about making the connections?
No, we don't provide the central hub, but we work with companies that do provide that central hub, and usually it's an ERP package, because the ERP should be doing your accounting, your inventory management, your order management, your returns, and so on and so forth. And it doesn't matter whether you use a third-party logistics in that. That's just another spoke in this entire scenario. What we provide is the ability to integrate all these pieces together. and have synchronized data flow between them all. Because what we do is we sit down with a customer and say, okay, what do you want to do in terms of how do you want to move the data? So I basically work them through the exercise that we've just done, which is, okay, let's map it out. Let's whiteboard it. Let's say we go from here to here. You want to have this to here, but you want to move this to here. Once they do that, they have a much better understanding of the scope of the work that's involved and a much better understanding of how data will move, what they can and cannot do, and how that impacts the marketing side in terms of the experience and the trust relationship that they want to build.
Absolutely. That's what's so cool about this is because, you know, what you do is very techy, but really it all does boil down to providing a smooth customer experience.
And, you know, how many people in your audience have ordered online and can say, you know, I had a crappy experience, and yeah, I didn't get the email. I didn't get this, or my product didn't come exactly as I had ordered it.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting at Christmas. We did an exercise here in the office where we just after Christmas we sat everybody down and we said, okay, can everybody ordered online? There was lots of stuff. So we had lots of experiences to go through. So what we did was we took everybody's experiences and we identified the ones where there was no issues. So those got cut. Then we took the ones where people had some issues, and then we took the ones where people had lots of issues. And what we did was we dissected the experience, and we were able to identify where in the data flow there was a breakdown. Mm-hmm. It was usually because there was manual data entry going on.
That makes sense.
It was interesting to see that it wasn't just the little guys. The experience I used was a company in Ireland that sells sweaters on the internet. They make great sweaters. Yeah. But it was so obvious that their entire back end is not integrated. It's all manual data entry. Just because of the mistakes we could see in the process. We had the same experience we took apart an experience with Walmart and one with Toys R Us. So it's not the little guys. The big guys are just as vulnerable in this whole thing as well. So
let's talk a little bit about the differences with the big and the little in terms of the complexity of the job. So little ones, I would imagine, it's to a large extent, they've just never thought through the whole process. With the big ones, I would imagine there are complications because they have these very expensive legacy systems that need to be integrated somehow. Am I correct in those assumptions?
You are. You absolutely are. I think that as you get into bigger and bigger organizations, you have definitely the legacy applications that make it very difficult to do integration. As a company gets bigger, if you think about a company as it gets bigger, you have more departments and therefore you have more siloing. So you have more siloing in data, you have more siloing in the experience, and if you think about this omni-channel world where it's really about providing people with the same experience regardless of the channel that they're in and facilitating the way they buy, that doesn't lend itself to silos very well. So
no.
I think that one of the reasons we're seeing such disruption in North American retailing right now, besides the fact that in the United States they're over-retailed, but in Canada, it's that it's just incrementally more complex to make all these things talk to each other in a seamless manner to engender the same relationships through all these channels simply because of the number of moving parts. So inventorying the moving parts, making sure that you have your data flows down, I think is part and parcel of laying that foundation. So a lot of companies don't actually step back and look at their internal processes. Like one of the kind of things that we've done with people is I'll get everybody in a room in a company that is involved in handling an order. So you take everybody, front office, back office, put them all in a room, and you take a ball of wool or a ball of string, and you start with the first order touch. You have them move the string through the organization as to how many people touch that order. And it's like the light bulbs go on. It's like, are you kidding
That's
me?
That's lovely. I like that. That's so nice and visual.
Are you kidding That's me great. That we handle an order this many times? And, you know, that for any medium-sized business, I think, is really, really important to do. But how many companies do that kind of stuff?
So why don't they? Like, is it just they get too caught up in the day-to-day and they've sort of grown organically and until there's a crisis, they don't think about it?
Yeah, I think there's a level of complacency. I think we've been conditioned. I've had this conversation with our accountants because I think we've been conditioned in the Western world to think about the transaction and only the transaction. Mm-hmm. And that's an accounting thing. So if you think about most companies, what are they worried about? They're worried about how many transactions, the value of those transactions, what shows up in their books, in their P&L, and they don't think of the wider world. And up until probably 2008, that was okay. A company did business, it put a shingle out, got some glossy marketing stuff. Maybe they had a really cool product. They did a couple of trade shows. They got some sales reps. What do companies measure? They measure increase in sales. Most companies don't measure client retention. They don't measure how often a customer comes back.
Which amazes me. You'd think that would be such a high priority measurement.
Well, you'd think. The more sophisticated companies do. But I think this is into small and medium-sized companies. This is part of the impact of B2C and e-commerce is that this is shaking up a lot of companies, that they're having to think this way. So
yes.
We have this, I think what's happening is that you have this absolutely incredible rate of change in technology right now. I mean, things are changing so fast that even companies like us, we have a hard time keeping up. And we're only in a very specific little niche. So you think about the ERP vendor that's trying to be everything to everybody or everything to that customer, can't possibly be good at everything.
Right.
So some of our old mindsets, that single neck to strangle, single application that can do everything. I think a lot of these notions and ideas have to change.
How should a company then go about choosing its ERP system? Because that is the hub, right? So it's pretty crucial.
Well, it is. And I think that comes back to what it is that they
want it to do.
They represent. What do they want to, what's the experience they want to provide? Why are they doing what they're doing? I mean, these are all marketing questions, but if you don't have answers to those questions, it makes it very hard to make the next step, which is to select the technology that you want to use internally, because there are ERPs that are designed for distribution companies. There are ERPs that are designed for companies that do production. Well, the two are very different. So I think this is why, to me, I keep coming back to marketing, and a lot of small businesses don't do marketing very well. How many of them have marketing plans? I mean, that's probably a question that's better answered by you.
Far too few of them.
The world in which we operate today and how we consume information has changed dramatically. You know, we had a conversation the other day with a company, and the guy said, well, if I integrate my shopping cart to my accounting system, I don't want my customer to see what my accounting is.
They wouldn't, would they?
Looked at the guy, and I said, well, why would they? Well, no, they're putting the order in my system. And I said, no, time out. They're not putting the order in your system. The system putting the order in your system.
I mean, that's an excellent point, because I think part of the challenge here too is that a lot of business people really don't have a solid grasp on how this works.
They don't.
And I think, you know, and I think companies, even including yours perhaps at times, have not done the best job at distilling it to something that's plain English.
Oh, I would totally agree with you. Totally agree. Technology companies are the worst for simplifying. There's a direct correlation between the level of adoption of some of this technology and some of these approaches to what actually people understand about them. How do you address it? Well, I think vendors like ourselves, and we provide more and more, our content that we're putting out on the internet is educational content.
Makes sense. So if somebody were at the stage where they felt, yeah, we really need somebody to help us put all this together, what are the questions they should be asking? What should they be looking for in choosing an integration partner?
You need to look beyond the technology, and you need to look at the depth of knowledge. Yeah, are you trying to buy a total solution from a single partner because that's their business model? Do they work with other partners? How large is their ecosystem? Or how large is the ecosystem of people who work together? Is there a complementary product that can be integrated into that experience? Mm-hmm. And then how open are they to educating you?
Right.
It's a personality issue as well. Can you work with these guys?
Of course.
I mean, these guys,
sure.
You know, too many companies approach that type of relationship is it's adversarial. I'm going to squeeze them for the mm-hmm. best price without realizing that, in fact, you're creating a partnership with a company that's integral to the success of your business.
Yep.
So why would you start the relationship on a footing where I'm going to try and squeeze you till you bleed? Or piss you off, right? Excuse my language, right in the sales site.
Yeah, exactly.
And that I think is a real change that all of this technology is forcing on companies because it flies in the face of what happened in the past.
Right.
Typical relationships were adversarial. They were one way. I'm the guy writing the check, so I have the big stick.
Right. Yeah. And I think, as you pointed out, we're at a stage where we're all interdependent. You can't function with just one partner.
No, that's right.
Yeah, totally. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, Robin. I really appreciate this. It's not the easiest subject to handle, and I think it's one that my audience needs to learn more about.
Okay, so it's still not going to be easy for you to find and choose the right technology partners, but I think Robin's advice was sound, certainly as a starting point. Figure out basically what it is that you are trying to accomplish and use that as your starting point. Then from there, work your way through the various criteria. It's been a long interview and I am suffering not only from a broken foot, but also from a cold. So I think I'm just going to end it at that today, but I do look forward to chatting with you next week. And in the meantime, I would be absolutely thrilled to hear from you. You can always reach me by email, TEMASINMARKETINGA@frankreactions.com, on Twitter, which is simply @TemaFrank, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, whatever works best for you. Also, if you do enjoy these interviews and find them valuable, I would really be grateful if you would post reviews on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen, because that will help other people discover this. And also, of course, to send on links to it to your colleagues who might benefit from this. Thank you so much, and we'll chat again next week. Bye.